Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, entitled Talks Between Narada and King Prachinabarhi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please repeat. Mama ite manasa yad yad. Mama ite manasa yad yad. Asavaham iti bruvan. Asavaham iti bruvan. Grinyat tat puman radham. Grihniyat tat puman radham. Karma yena punarbhavah. Karma yena punarbhavah. Mamaite manasa yad yad. Asavahamiti bruvan. Grinya tat puman radham. Karma yena punarbhavaham. Word for word. Mamam. Mine. Iti. All these. Manasam. By the mind. Yat yat. Whatever. Asau, that, aham, I, itim, thus, bruvan, accepting, griniyat, takes with him, tat, that, puman, the living entity, radham, perfected, karman, work, yena, by which, punaham, again, bhavaham, material existence. So translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation, the living entity labors under the bodily conception of I am this, I am that. My duty is this, and therefore I shall do it. These are all mental impressions, and all these activities are temporary. Nonetheless, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity gets a chance to execute all his mental concoctions. Thus, he gets another body. Please repeat. The living entity labors under the bodily conception of I am this, I am that. My duty is this, and therefore I shall do it. These are all mental impressions. And all these activities are temporary. Nonetheless, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity gets a chance to execute all his mental concoctions. Thus he gets another body. Purport. As long as one is absorbed in the bodily conception, his activities are performed on that platform. This is not very difficult to understand. In the world, we see that every nation is trying to supersede every other nation, and that every man is trying to advance beyond his fellow man. All these activities are going on under the name of advancement of civilization. There are many plans for making the body comfortable, and these plans are carried in the subtle body after the destruction of the gross body. It's not a fact that after the gross body is destroyed, the living entity is finished. Although many great philosophers and teachers in this world are under the impression that after the body is finished, everything is finished, this is not a fact. Narada Muni says in this verse that at death, one takes his plans with him, griniyat. And to execute these plans, he gets another body. This is called punar bhavaha. When the gross body is finished, the plans of the living entity are taken by the mind, and by the grace of the Lord, the living entity gets a chance to give these plans shape in the next life. This is known as the law of karma. As long as the mind is absorbed in the laws of karma, a certain type of body must be accepted in the next life. Karma is the aggregate of fruitive activities conducted to make this body comfortable and or uncomfortable. We have actually seen that when one man was about to die, he requested his physician to give him a chance to live 4 more years so that he could finish his plans. This means that while dying, he was thinking of his plans. After his body was destroyed, he doubtlessly carried his plans with him by means of the subtle body, composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. Thus, he would get another chance by the grace of the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, who is always within the heart. Sarvasya chaham hridisani vishto matas mritir gyanam apohanancha. In the next birth, one acquires remembrance from the Super Soul and begins to execute the plans begun in the previous life. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita in another verse. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridesher junatishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantrarudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. Situated on the vehicle given by material nature and reminded by the Super Soul within the heart, the living entity struggles all over the universe to fulfill his plans, thinking, I am a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya, I am an American, I am an Indian, and so on. All these designations are of the same essence. There is no point in becoming a Brahmana in preference to an American, or becoming an American in preference to a Negro. After all, these are all bodily conceptions under the modes of material nature. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha mukham karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripatamaham vande shri gurum dinataranam. So reading the verse once again. The living entity labors under the bodily conception of I am this, I am that, my duty is this, and therefore I shall do it. These are all mental impressions, and all these activities are temporary. Nonetheless, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity gets a chance to execute all his mental concoctions. Thus, he gets another body. So first of all, it's a great pleasure for me to be here in the Krishna Balaram Mandir and be invited to share some realizations from Srimad Bhagavatam. I feel especially happy because this is the birthplace of my Krishna consciousness. 16 years ago, I was traveling in India without aim, without knowing where I'm going to, what I'm going to find. And somehow I came to the gate of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and one of the devotees of the Krishna Balaram Temple 24-hour kirtan, he was there. He was selling tapes of Indra Prabhu's first album, Prayers to the Dust of Raja. And he was selling the tapes there, and he stopped me and he started explaining about the service, about Vrindavan. And he was kind to invite me to join the kirtan. He said, it's my turn to sing after half an hour, why don't you come? And like that, he engaged me in, he taught me how to play kartalas, he gave me Mahaprasada, he gave me so many things. He took me in Parikram, and for maybe 10 days I was here, engaged in chanting the holy name, hearing the scriptures, seeing the deities, doing Parikrama, taking a lot of Prasada and Charanamrita and all of that. And then when I decided to go, he said, no, you don't have to go. Just leave everything. Just stay here, no? Enjoy. I said, you're crazy. No, I am an army officer. I have to be back for my service in Brazil. And if I delay even one minute, no, I'm in trouble. You're telling me to give up everything. Just stay here. And he was very insistent. Just forget everything. They'll never find you here. And anyway, when I decided to leave, he told me, you're going to come back. No, you took so much prasada, you had darshan, you went on parikrama. I know one day you're going to come back, and you're going to regret the time you wasted. And that's what happened. After 2 years, I couldn't tolerate anymore. I was feeling that what I'm doing here, no, because I continue reading Bhagavad Gita and chanting the holy name, and I was feeling that I'm just wasting my time. I want to go back to Vrindavana. I want to join this Hare Krishna movement. So 2 years later, I came back, and when I came to the gate again, the same devotee was there. And it was so amazing to meet him again and to come back here. So I have been here for some time. I did Bhakti Shastri in Vrindavana, Bhakti Vaibhava. I spent 6 years in Vrindavana. And now I have been in Mayapur teaching Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava as a service. So thank you for the opportunity to be here to share some words about Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the pastime in which Narada Muni is speaking to King Prachina Barhi. And Narada told him an amazing analogy, an amazing allegory, which is nothing but the life of King Prachina Barhi. And is also not different from the life of each one of us. It's the journey of the soul, the Puranjana, the living entity living inside the material body. And the allegory will go through so many details explaining the situation of the soul in this material life. So after telling that story, the king asked him to explain directly. And now in this chapter, Narada Muni is enlightening the king. And he came now to the essence. He's telling him, this is the false ego. This is the root cause of all the problems. No? Mama ete, I think everything is mine. And that I am this, I am that. So Prabhupada translates saying, the living entity labors under the bodily conception of I am this, I am that. This is my duty and therefore I shall do it. So we identify that, okay, I am a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya, I am Vaishya, I am a Shudra. I am a man or a woman, Indian, American, etc. And then whatever we can possess, we try to possess and have more and more and more. This is how the false ego works. The false ego is not real. The living entity is eternally Krishna's servant. The living entity is never anything different from that. But then, somehow or another, the living entity comes in contact with the material world. Even though it's impossible to mix matter and spirit, they don't mix. Just like you cannot mix water and oil, you cannot mix the soul with the material energy. So Parikshit Maharaj is very intrigued to understand how is it possible for the living entity, for the spirit soul, to somehow become entangled in a material body. He asked that question in the second canto, and Shukadeva Goswami says, Atma maya rite rajan parasya anubhava atmanaha nagate tarta sambandha. Nagate tarta sambandha. Actually, there is no sambandha. It's impossible to have any sambandha between the soul and the body. So, how do we think that we are the material body? He says, swapna drashtu riva anjasa. It's just like a person in a dream. He's imagining that he's a king, he's dreaming that he's a king, and so in the dream he's seeing himself acting in the body of a king. but it has nothing to do with his real self. So the false ego is similar to that. It's just like some hallucination, and the soul is there imagining that I am a man, or I am a woman, or American, or Indian, whatever. And because it is false, it's just an illusion, the false ego needs something to maintain itself. So what are the two pillars, the two main ways that the false ego tries to maintain itself, to affirm itself as reality? Is through the concept of I am and I have. Aham Mameti. Oh, in this verse, Mamaiti. Or like Kansa. Kansa had two wives, Asti and Prapti. Asti is the sense of I am something, to be something. And Prapti is the sense of obtaining something. It's not only about having, because a person may have a lot or may have a little, but the false ego always wants more and more and more. Prapti means to obtain something more. So by obtaining more and more and by being something more, then the false ego tries to affirm itself and to prove that I am real, that I exist. But actually the false ego is afraid, because ultimately we know that we are not this, we are only Krishna's servants. So the false ego is fighting with all his might against that obvious truth that actually you are Krishna's servants. And he has so many ways, so many tricks to try to bewilder us. So everyone is under that impression. Prabhupada says, no, one may be American, one may be Indian, this, that, but it's all the same essence. This reminds me of a story of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. When he joined the Hare Krishna movement, he was in a black body. So he noticed that many devotees would have prejudice against him because he was in that kind of body. And he came to Prabhupada to complain that you are preaching that you are not this body, but your followers are discriminating me because I am in a black body. So something is wrong. Then Prabhupada told him, yes, and if you believe that you are black, then that means you're not different from them. That was Prabhupada's answer, and that was like an enlightenment for him. Because it's true, they're identifying that I am white, and he was identifying I am black. What's the difference? They're both identifying with the material body. It's the same thing. Someone may identify I am a man. Someone identifies I am a woman. Both are wrong. Well, not neither man or woman. We're Krishna's servants. So the false ego is extremely tricky. And it can always find some way to turn around anything we do against us. So even after we become devotees, no, we identify, okay, we start to identify, I am Krishna's servant. And we're trying to think like that. We're trying to engage in Krishna's service. But then we decide, okay, let me distribute some books. And the false ego takes that, okay, so I am a book distributor. And I'm distributing so many books, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful, look how many books I have distributed. And then the false ego takes that, which would be our salvation from material entanglement, and turns it against us, so that we become proud, and we fall down. Or someone else likes to study, and study Shastra, and learn Sanskrit, and this and that, and then he becomes proud, oh, I am a Sanskrit scholar. Again, the false ego has turned it around, and put it against the person. And any service can be like that, pujari, whatever. So the thing is that it's not enough to just do something for Krishna. The consciousness in which we do is very important. Again, coming to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he wrote in one of his books like an article about all the things that he had done in life, no? And he's imagining that he's going to die soon, and he's going to meet Srila Prabhupada. And then he says, Prabhupada, today is the last day of my life. Soon I'm going to meet you. I'm going to go back to you. Then Prabhupada asks him, okay, but have you given up your false ego? Did you give up sex desire, which is the clear expression of false ego that I'm identifying with the material body? So he says, no, Prabhupada, I have distributed so many books. Throughout my life, I have distributed books in all the major libraries and in different countries, even in the Soviet Union. And then Prabhupada said, okay, but have you given up your false ego? Did you give up sex desire? He said, Prabhupada, I have been preaching all over the world. I have been preaching in so many countries in Africa and this and that. Okay, that's very nice, but have you given up your false ego? And then he again says, no, Prabhupada, I have been preaching to head of states, to presidents, to diplomats, to great people. Oh, that's very good, but have you given up your false ego? And then he goes on and says, no, Prabhupada, I have been following Ekadashi very strictly, fasting even from water most of my devotional life, and I haven't missed any day to chant my 16 rounds. Often I chant much more than that. Oh, that's great, but have you given up your false ego? It goes on and on and on like that. So in the end, Prabhupada said, I'm sorry, no? But you cannot come with me now. So Prabhupada turns and starts walking away, and he starts crying very bitterly. But then he remembers, oh, I still have some hours before I leave this gross body. So I have enough time to surrender to Krishna fully, to give up my false ego. And that was much before he actually left the body, but he was already getting that realization. And when the time came, he wanted to give up everything. He didn't want to think that I am GBC, that I am Guru, that I am Sannyasi. No, I'm just Krishna's servant. I just want to listen about Krishna. I just want to remember Krishna. Don't come to me as a Sannyasi or a GBC member in these last days. So, because we have to die before we die. The subtle body that Prabhupada explained here, which is the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, that has to die before the gross body dies. Unless that happens, what happens? The person has to carry on those desires and propensities and plans to the next body. And Krishna is very kind, so as the Paramatma, he is going to help us to get another body, to fulfill those plans, and to give us the facilities and the situation, the remembrance to do that. Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Radha Shyama Sundara ki jai. So the false ego is like that. We have to get rid of the false ego in this lifetime. It's not enough to just keep doing externally devotional service, but the mind has to be purified. The heart has to be purified. You have to get rid of that false identity. It's all about identity. It's all about becoming Krishna conscious. Identify ourselves that I'm not Brahman, I'm not Kshatriya, I'm not Indian, I'm not man, I'm not woman. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. That's the essence of all Varnashrama. That's the essence of all. That's our real identity. And that's the switch that we need to manage to do in our lives. I have been thinking about that so much in the last month, because I was thinking, it's the basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita. It's the first teaching Prabhupada gave to us. You're not this body. But still, we tend to carry on that propensity for years and years and years, no? And it's such an obstacle. Because it doesn't matter what we do. We may do amazing things. But if you don't change that identity, then it's useless. It's just feeding our false ego. Whatever we do, if you don't change the identity that I am a Krishna servant, that is just going to make our false ego greater. So that's extremely important. It's so urgent for us to actually try to always remember ourselves, remind ourselves. No? And actually, in my personal life, I can notice, sometimes I am remembering Krishna, I'm trying to serve Krishna, and suddenly I can notice that my consciousness shifts, and suddenly I am identifying with something, I am trying to enjoy something, and then again you have to pull back and again turn to Krishna, and oh, please Krishna, let me always remember that I am your servant. So it's very tricky. But the greatest trick is that we cannot fight the false ego directly. We cannot just go and like try to attack the false ego, because the false ego has no substance. Just like we said, it's just like a dream or some hallucination. So if you try to fight the false ego, it's like you're fighting darkness. It has no substance. So how do you fight darkness? You switch on the light, right? So how do we fight the false ego? You become Krishna conscious. You hear about Krishna. You chant about Krishna. You glorify Krishna. you preach. Like that, no? So, because the moment you become Krishna conscious, automatically the false ego has no place. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. So, when Krishna is present, Maya cannot be there. So, being present, being conscious, being Krishna conscious makes the false ego disappear automatically. So the moment we are speaking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, hearing about Krishna, in that very moment, the false ego cannot be present. But if we do the activity only externally, then internally we may be actually full of false ego. I may externally be distributing books, but what's the consciousness behind that? I am be externally going to the Bhakti Shastri classes, but what's my motivation? Is it that I want to understand who I am to engage in pure devotional service? Or is it that I want to have a title, to pose myself as greater than others? So it's very tricky. The same weapons that Krishna gives us to fight Maya, Maya turns them around and uses them to backfire us. It's super tricky. So, like that, the thing is that we have to be conscious. Imagine if you can wake up in the morning and just immediately remember Krishna, chant the holy name, and get out of bed, and then take shower, chanting the holy name, and then come out and put the tilak, remembering that this body belongs to Krishna. This is a temple of Krishna. And then dress as a Vaishnava, thinking, how can I please Krishna? Let me dress as a devotee. Then go to the temple, go to Mangalarti, and be present in Mangalarti, attentive, actually thinking about the meaning of the prayers that we are singing, and then chant japa very attentively, and then take prasada very attentively, and do our service throughout the day very attentively. So basically, to be Krishna conscious and to be practicing bhakti yoga means to be attentive, to be conscious of what we are doing at every step. But it's not easy. Not that we need practice, we need to be actually cultivating that consciousness. Because the moment you get distracted, then that's it. Maya turns around, and then suddenly the same activity that we are doing for Krishna, now we are doing for us, and it's nourishing the false ego again. So it's like that. It's something that needs cultivation, needs practice, needs attentiveness. Once a devotee asked Hridayananda Maharaj, what means bhakti? What is devotion? And he said, devotion means attention. Now you're cooking for Krishna, okay, pay attention to what you're doing. Cannot be just cooking and spacing out and thinking of something else. No, you're cooking for Krishna, you do the best you can. You put your full attention in that. Or now you're chanting Hare Krishna, put your full attention in that. Another feature of the false ego is that it can only live in the past or in the future. The false ego is always trying to anticipate the future. What can I get in the future? What can I enjoy? And trying to anticipate what is going to come. Or the false ego is in the past, identifying with what happened before and lamenting for the past. Oh, why did it happen to me like this? I don't like, no? I'm so sad that that person said something to me like this. So the false ego is either, no, in Rajaguna, which is anticipating for the future and trying to, no, go ahead, or is lamenting for the past. But if you manage to stay present in the moment, right now, and doing what you're doing for Krishna with full concentration, then false ego cannot take place. Has no space. So, again, no, it's not easy because it requires practice. Japa is a great practice because we have to be present. Each Maha Mantra is not like, oh, I'm going to chant a very nice round now. It doesn't work. One round is too much. You have to say, no. This Maha Mantra, I want to chant this Maha Mantra attentively. And then the next mantra. And then the next name. And then the next syllable. So become more and more conscious of that present moment. That name. That exact moment that we have. Because the moment I think, oh, I want to chant a nice round, that means not in the future. I want to finish this, after 5-10 minutes, I want to finish this round, and I want this to be a good round. But no, that's not the present. The present is the mantra that I'm chanting right now. So that's difficult to do. To forget the past oh, but yesterday this happened and that devotee told me something I didn't like. No, no, forget. Oh, but today I have to do this and that and so many plans. No, no. Now, this Maha Mantra is the most important thing. So that's an exercise. And if you chant japa like that, it's very tough for the mind and for the false ego. They have no place. They cannot move. They find no opportunity to engage in rajaguna, in tamaguna. You're just in sattva. Sattva means the state of existing. Sat means existence, eternal existence. And tva is the state, right? So sattva is the state of being present in that moment. And the spiritual world is like that. The spiritual world has no future and no past. Everyone is just present in that moment and serving Krishna with full attention in that particular moment. Even though there is a sequence of events, there may be night and day and Krishna wakes up and goes to sleep and takes prasada, but whatever happens, everyone is fully absorbed in what they are doing for Krishna in that particular moment. No? Brahma Sanhita says, no, that in the spiritual world, time cannot pass even for half a moment. So, this is spiritual existence. That's Vishuddha Sattva. It's Sattva without any tinge of passion or ignorance. It's just being fully present, fully conscious, fully attentive in that present moment in Krishna's service. That's not a joke. No, it's very difficult. It requires a lot of practice. I'm just speaking here in theory. I know that in my personal life, I have so much trouble in being present, in chanting my japa with concentration. So, but the opportunity to speak about that helps me to also identify my own challenges. And that's the good thing about the false ego also. The moment you identify that this is not me, this is just the ego, it's the false ego, then that very moment it is dissipated. Because false ego is all about identifying with that. The moment I identify, oh, I'm something else. Let's say I'm angry. I'm very angry. The moment I realize, oh, I'm not angry, that's the false ego. I'm a spirit soul. Huh? This person is a spirit soul. Why should I be angry at him? My false ego is getting in shock, in conflict with his false ego. It's a clash of ego, actually. And that can happen in all levels. In the individual level, in the community level, in the nation level, in the, like, for example, just like two people may fight, also two countries may fight, two religious groups may fight. So even that, a religion, in the material sense, in the institutional sense, religion is just an expression of the false ego. The person identifies, I am Hindu, you are Muslim, he is Christian. And then what happens? Oh, I am good, you're bad. I am right, you're wrong. So let's kill each other, let's fight. Because you're Muslim and I'm Christian. Let's fight. So in the name of religion, people, they identify so much with that. To the point that they forget that I am a part of the Lord, he's a part of the Lord. All that is forgotten. Now I am identifying myself as some material identity. Oh, I am Christian. He is Muslim, therefore I have to fight him. And then crusades, and then all kinds of things, no? Terrorism in the name of religion. And even, no, oh, I am ISKCON, he is Gaudiya Math, or I am this, he is that, and then so much fighting. Why? Because of false ego. I identify myself as being part of this group, and therefore anyone who is not in my group is wrong, and they are bad, and they have to be destroyed and defeated. So, even religion in that sense becomes an obstacle. Because instead of becoming a means to unite everyone, to bring us close together to Krishna, and closer together to Krishna's parts and parcels, it becomes a reason for dissension, for divisions, for fight. But it's not the self, it's the ego. So even if someone is angry at us, is giving us trouble, he still should not be angry at the person. Because that's not the person, that's the ego, which is creating trouble. So anyway, it's a very big topic and it's very tricky. The only way to escape that is actually by being Krishna conscious. That's why even though Kansa sent so many demons to kill Krishna, no? One after another, all the demons are coming, Kansa is sending. But what's the way to fight the demons? It's not actually fighting the demons. We just take shelter of Krishna. Krishna kills the demons. So we hear about Krishna, we speak about Krishna, we become Krishna conscious. All these demons, they will be dissipated and ultimately Kansa will die. So the false ego will be finished. So these are some ideas, not based on this verse, that Narada is explaining that it's all about the false ego. We are thinking, I am this, I am that. And because of this identification, then we have to take birth again. We can do the same thing. Arjuna was going to kill thousands of people in Kurukshetra. Krishna said, no problem. No problem. Why? Because if you kill them without false ego, there's no problem. Yasya nahan krite bhava buddhir yasya nalipyate hatopi taimar lokan nahanti nadibadyate. So Krishna says, if you kill, but you're not killing with false ego, and your intelligence is not entangled, even though you kill many, you're not killing, and you're not going to be entangled. On the other hand, if you kill one ant out of false ego, one mosquito with false ego, for that you are accountable. So it's not about what we do, it's about the consciousness in which we do the things. So Krishna, Narada Muni is teaching us this. And if you just manage to act without false ego, then whatever you do, be perfect. Simple things, big things, doesn't matter. Okay, so I'll stop here. If anyone has any questions or comments or expanding on these realizations, then you can raise your hands. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There's Mataji. One minute, the mic is going because I cannot hear.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for these strong instructions on how to get back to the spiritual world. I had a question is that how about those who leave the body in the dham? There also does the false ego come into question, or is there any special benediction?
So what about those who leave the body in the dham? Can the false ego still affect them, or there is a special benediction? To be in the dham is a great benediction. Just like I said in the beginning of the class, I came here to Vrindavana 16 years ago. I had no idea of who is Krishna. I had no idea of anything. I was not following any principle. But I came here, and the same day I started chanting Hare Krishna, became vegetarian, started following all the principles, got engaged in devotional service with the devotees. So the energy of the dham is very powerful. Extremely powerful. So to be in the dham is very special, and is a great blessing. But you should never take advantage. You should try to be Krishna conscious. You should not just count on the mercy of Krishna, count on the dham. We have to try our best. Then whatever you do is actually insufficient to become perfect. So then the mercy will come. But the mercy comes when you prove to Krishna that we deserve, that we are actually serious about that. Otherwise, just like Ajamila, he chanted the holy name, even unwillingly, and he got the result. But then there is also a story, not that devotees tell, that someone heard about that, so he was a great businessman, he had a shop, and then he was thinking, okay, so I'll have so many children, and I'll give devotional names. So one is Krishna, one is Narayana, one is Vishnu, one is this, that. So when he was dying, he was upstairs in the house, and in the shop downstairs, and he was calling the first son, Narayana, Narayana, and he was dying. So Narayana came, but he didn't die. After some time, he called the second one, Vishnu, Vishnu. And the second son came, and then Krishna, Krishna. And one by one, he called all the 10 children. When the last one came, he thought, oh, who is that taking care of the shop? And he died. Think of the shop and his profit. And so it didn't work. Because he's trying to trick Krishna. And Krishna is very smart. So also may try to trick Krishna and just stay in the Dhamma and think, okay, I can do any nonsense I like and die in the Dhamma and that's fine. Then I achieve the result. But Krishna may put you in an ambulance and take you out of the Dhamma just before you die also. Or or you may take a birth as a monkey in the Dhamma or so many other things. So we don't want to take chances. We want to do the best we can for Krishna. And the concern is not about getting liberation or not getting liberation, going back to God or not. Our only concern is, Krishna, how can I engage in your service? If Krishna wants us to take birth again or not, or go back to God, that's up to him. That's not our problem, actually. Is that okay? Thank you, Mataji. Any other comments, questions, realizations? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Mad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.